Today, the Great Kiwi Build Reset. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctly Australian and New Zealand flavour. Today I'm joined again by Joe Wilkes. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Martin. That sounded a bit like our great KiwiSaver robbery intro.
I know. Well, you know, it's all about, you've got to make it a little bit hypey, right? Because the thing about this Kiwi Build Reset, I've been watching this quite closely. It's pretty remarkable, right? So this was effectively an iconic program that was going to build thousands and thousands of properties and, save the New Zealand property market and give people the opportunity to access some affordable homes. And, well, it's all blown up, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they set out with some ambitious targets and the Labour Party won the election off that and a couple of other things. And they've delivered. And obviously, they're not a clear party. They've got their co-conspirators, but they came up with this idea that they're going to build 100,000 houses over 10 years, and it's an ambitious target without really, unless you've already got the builders on your books, it's quite a challenge because the builders in New Zealand have been running around building new properties wherever they can. We're at a record number of dwellings seen since the 1970s. So there's no shortage of construction in the private sector anyway. But the Kiwi Build, I'm going to call them clowns, the people that have been operating it, they've gone about thinking that the issue is a supply problem, without ever really understanding that actually the main issue is a credit problem. It's too much debt in the system, too much cost having to be borne out throughout the system on production of materials, production of getting sites ready for building. But there is, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of empty new builds now all over New Zealand, and in some areas they're really struggling to find support from the market. Now, the Kiwi Build idea was that we'll get all these houses built and we'll be able to do it at a price that Kiwis can afford. But they haven't really ever thought about, well, how do you do it when labour costs are inflated by credit and where other, you've got to be able to compete in a market where you can pay your builders the same as they can earn elsewhere. Now, I think they've built about 1,000 so far. And what's really noticeable is that some of the sites that weren't part of Kiwi Build have now been added in to try and boost the sales numbers. Private developments in places like Wellington, big apartment blocks, multiple units, they've been added to the Kiwi Build banner, which is great from the development's perspective because you've got yourself an underpin of a price floor. But it's not that good for actually the creation or the double whammy creation of new building taking place that creates an asset off the debt increase, and then the secondary accumulation of new credit when a first-time buyer or somebody else buys it and takes on a big mortgage. So they've got to keep building going because so many people are dependent on it in our economy, and it's the same in Australia. But they don't seem to understand that the issues aren't about can we produce it, can we get it done. The issues are about, because of the lack of regulation in the banking sector, everything's just got too expensive.
Yeah, so they've basically taken off the target and they've said, well, we'll just keep muddling along, but we're not going to really give it much focus now. And that's my understanding.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they sort of fell fairly abysmally. They were meant to have 1,000 homes built in the first year, and I think that ended up about 340-odd. And the reality of it, I drove around the areas in South Auckland, Pokeno and Pukekohe, and I think we sent some footage from those developments.
Ah, Kiwi Build is here in Pukekohe. Three-bedroom homes from 575, so 575,000 for a three-bed. Four-bedroom homes from 635. Now, the average UK house price is currently £227,000. Which works out at about 430,000 New Zealand dollars. So Their three beds here are best part of $150,000 more.
Those areas were Kiwi build, struggling to sell, no buyers, lots of empty units, and you know, as a result, why would anyone want to build more into that type of market? You want to build into a market where there's some demand.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing, and it's a general observation, but the more that people try and interfere in the property market, and you know, try this stimulus and that approach, and you know, I just keep saying, and I say it again, why don't we just let the property market be the property market? Stop interfering with it. Stop playing with it. You know, and it's because it's such a critical part of the economy. But frankly, this sort of meddling just creates more issues than it solves.
Now, well, we're going to have a lot of more meddling because we're going to now lower the deposit requirements for first-time buyers in the market, and that is to encourage them to be able to take on the big debts. You know, we talked about it with the just the level of savings in New Zealand. There's so much of the market, 90% of households have less than $50,000 in cash savings. There's just not enough when you're trying to sell houses at 600 and 700 and 800 and well, a lot of these properties in Auckland and Tauranga, they're over a million. There just isn't the savings to back up the purchase or the borrowing with unless you really do strip back the low deposit. So we're going to find that there's an encouragement to make lending easier. My breakfast at the ANZ highlighted that the rates are going to continue to go down. They're going to put pressure on older people to go and buy investment properties by probably not substituting the cash for a simple purchase of an asset. It'll be cash and some more debt for a simple purchase of an asset because we've got to keep credit simulated. I read an article this week about reverse mortgages now in Canada they are the only area of new credit creation that is growing. Mm. So the amount of reverse mortgages went up by 43.23% in August of 2019 compared to August of 2018. So there is this right, where the hell do we create the credit from in the economy? Right, let's start encouraging the reverse mortgages. Let's go and start encouraging people to refinance the family home to pay for their retirement. It has a knock-on. Eventually, it has a knock-on elsewhere. When I was in the UK, I saw people who, having done this in their 60s and taking on reverse mortgages in the 1990s and early 2000s, when they got to being in their 70s and needing either more money to go and facilitate, you know, payments for private medical care, payments for nursing homes, payments for these other things, because the property market had flatlined, all they had was this big debt that was being charged at higher interest rates than they would have paid when they'd first paid the mortgage off, and there had been no equity gain. So it just tightened things up for, you know, those years when you really do need a bit of a protection and a buffer. So everything that I've seen before is being encouraged again here, and we are getting to a point where I think the banking sector are getting very, very concerned about, you know, they're still growing credit, but if we start to see people look at the economy and think, right, things are a bit tight, I'm not going to go and spend the money in X, Y, or Z sector, I'm going to stick it and pay down my debt, and you see a reduction in the money supply. Because, you know, if people start paying down debt, that destroys money in the economy. And we're going to see some really, really big challenges. Some of the high street scenes that I saw in Tauranga, we talked about earlier, those are just indicative that there's pressure building.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, let's understand that the whole economy is founded on ever more credit growth. As soon as that goes into reverse, essentially, you know, it's curtains. And unfortunately, we've got no plan B. Neither in New Zealand nor in Australia has there been enough creativity and enough thinking about how to actually deal with these broader issues. And so we are stuck with this, you know, credit lever that's stuck in a position that is untenable. And unfortunately, it's going to be households ultimately who pick up the pieces.
Yeah, well, it's not just our household sector, I think, that are starting to feel the squeeze. We're also seeing it in the agricultural sector. Fonterra this week delayed the announcement of their results. Mm. Their market capitalization looks pretty much along the lines of the debt that they're carrying. There's an enormous pressure on the farming sector from a productive ability to service their debts. And there's been some just what I'm going to politely describe as awful decisions made by previous management of some of our big companies to go and take on ventures that they never had the capability to do, and it took them away from doing what they're really good at, which was sticking to the knitting of providing good produce from New Zealand to export. They've gone and taken on these international liabilities, which are proving to be massive liabilities, and it's just crippled the the ability to be productive. This week, I was in a meeting and I had overheard a conversation of somebody with their partner who works for Fonterra. A lot of their senior management and higher paid than the people beyond minimum wage have been asked to forego performance. They are now being told that they'll have to forego performance bonuses that many of them were expecting to receive because of a need to shore up the balance sheet. So this is more money that won't be there for spending on other things in the economy. I haven't seen new car sales data yet, but I've been informed that too has dropped off again in August compared to last year. I thought rather than do a Carmageddon post every month, that I'd probably look at that every 3 months and try and put something meaningful together. So we're starting to track that. We're starting to track now, and with some help from really good DFA people, appreciate you, all the work that they're doing. We've got tracking taking place on new listings, number of properties for sale, number of properties for rent across all major markets. We've got some great data coming out from Mike in Auckland and Guy out in Tauranga. And it's going to be really, really interesting.
Yeah, well, we'll keep watching, keep reporting, and see where this all ends up. Joe, I appreciate your time once again.
Appreciate it, Martin.
See you later. So there you have it. Important message there from Joe Wilkes, Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. See you next time.